disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please consider supporting us. Head over to www.deadsoulspodcast.com and see how you can donate to our research and investigations and find other ways to support us. We really appreciate you stopping by. You can also find us over on Instagram if that's more your thing. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. As always, thank you for joining us. A 2019 United States government poll tells us that around 11% of Americans believe that the Apollo moon landings were faked. Nothing more than a global hoax perpetrated by those fine folks over at NASA. That's 36.5 million people. It's a belief that is steadily growing in the United States too, according to data collected by both Statista and YouGov. Whilst the belief is indeed growing in popularity, it's also an extremely controversial one. Now, just me saying these words, and you have likely prejudged a number of things. You have likely prejudged me for discussing such a project without me having even said if I agree with the moon hoax theory or not. You've likely prejudged what this episode will be. Hell, you may even have prejudged this entire show based on us giving airtime to such a subject. Based on said prejudgment, you might likely be reaching to turn this off right now. But please don't. Please just hear us out. Give us a piece of your time if you would. And the reason I ask this so calmly is because in my experience, those who talk about the theory that NASA faked the Apollo moon landings are often aggressively called nutjobs, wackos, conspiracy idiots, or far, far worse. Discussion of said topic seems to trigger almost a primeval use of violence to get the complete moron who is spouting such bullshit the hell away from them. Fair enough. But you guys all know here on Dead Souls Social Club, we take the time to listen to facts, science, and data, no matter where it takes us and no matter how difficult the subject. Then at the end of that, we encourage you all to assess the facts that are on the table and form your own thoughts, feelings, and judgments. Tonight's episode is no different. Now, I'm not going to sit here and preach what I believe or don't believe and urge you to believe the same as me. No, sir. We're all adults here and we're all friends, I hope. I personally think it's important to hear what someone has to say and what they choose to think and believe, particularly if it's the exact opposite or the furthest possible thing to what my thoughts or opinions are. Something I wish those who openly like to engage in political discourse in my country, and others, would also do. The world might be a happier place for it. Anyway, digression. So why do so many people believe something which is generally considered by many, many people of high regard and intelligent acumen to be a lie? Why are so many questioning what they have been told by their government, media, education establishments, scientists, their literature, influencers, and 89% of their countrymen? What has led us to the theory of this great Apollo lie? Well, back on July 20th, 1969, when millions of people around the world tuned in and watched as Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin supposedly set foot on the surface of the moon, any kind of doubt was pushed well aside in the public's mind in favor of the excitement of the day. A simpler time. Perhaps the general public was less cynical and were happy to believe what their governments and media communicated to them, no questions asked. And that was generally that. But that is essentially the crux of it, isn't it? That's the entire story right there. Everything you know and believe about NASA landing a man on the moon has come from one single source. NASA. Not a little bit of info. Not 99% of the information you know. No. Everything. There is not one single piece of moon landing knowledge that you have earned for yourself, researched, chanced upon, or tested in a laboratory and thus discovered or verified. NASA communicated the pre-launch activities of the agency and communicated the data and research. NASA controlled the live stream of the mission, not the media or the government. And all questions, information, data, evidence, and what we know about the Apollo missions is 100% provided to the public by NASA. This is then supported by the government and media, who then push the same story, the story given to them by NASA. Nothing to do with Apollo has been tested or even allowed to be challenged. Don't just take my word for it either. Head on over to Google or even call NASA yourself. They're in the phone book. You won't find anything different, I promise you. Now, compare that to similar mass communications or stories in the current zeitgeist, where you have been provided one story by the media or government, but millions upon millions of people suspect the supplied information might not be as is being communicated. Examples such as the COVID vaccines, the existence of extraterrestrials, the outcome of the 2020 US election, Big Pharma, the war in Iraq, 9/11, the list goes on. These are things that are questioned every day. So why is the Apollo moon missions anything different? The only reason is because Apollo is a positive story for the United States. But like any other mass communication that the global populace is asked to believe, there are, of course, questions and anomalies in the information. And those who push this story categorically refuse to engage or discuss those questions or anomalies. Why? Even a hardened believer has to admit that there is a point there, right? The general acceptance of the Apollo story was wholly unquestioned. Well, for the most part, until around 1976, when a gentleman by the name of Bill Kaysing emerged in the public eye. Bill Kaysing was an American author and conspiracy theorist who made the bold and original claim at the time that the Apollo moon landings between 1969 and 1972 were all elaborate hoaxes perpetrated against the American people. What's more, Bill came to the table with science, experience, and some interesting and controversial theories. This began a wave of questioning what NASA hasn't been able to shake ever since. Bill Kaysing was employed at Rocketdyne between 1956 to 1963. Rocketdyne was an American rocket engine design and production company headquartered out of the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. The Rocketdyne division was founded by North American Aviation in 1955 and later became part of Boeing. In the 1950s through the 1970s, Rocketdyne was the major supplier for NASA's development efforts, supplying all of their major engines. While working at Rocketdyne, Kaysing was privy to documents pertaining to the Mercury, Gemini, Atlas, and Apollo programs, and he argued that it was clear that a hoax was being perpetrated by NASA. This was supported by a NASA document that Kaysing stated that he had privileged access to, which detailed a study that NASA conducted in the early 1960s. The study calculated the likelihood of NASA being able to launch a man into space, have him touch down on the moon, and safely return him to Earth. The NASA document, which was reportedly withheld from government funding decision makers, documented a likelihood of just 0.0017% chance of the mission being a success. To be clear, that's less than 1%. So the Apollo moon landing hoax theory was born. Initially, hoax theorists stated the following anomalies as evidence of questionable legitimacy to the official story. 1. There were anomalies in the movement of the flag, which was being placed on the moon in the lunar footage. 2. Multiple light sources were evident in moon landing photographs, which shouldn't be the case on the lunar surface. 3. The appearance on moon photographs of crosshairs disappearing behind lunar objects and scenery. 4. The exceptional camera work, which would have been almost impossible under lunar conditions, from the Apollo astronauts. And 5. anomalous moon photographs which show questionable objects within view, and in one particular instance, a third person who could not have possibly been on the moon at the same time as Armstrong and Aldrin. Now, these points have been talked about, analysed, and gone over for the last 40 years, so I'm not going to go into any further details about those tonight. If you search Apollo Moon Hoax on YouTube, I'm sure you can find a wealth of videos that discuss those points further. What I would like to do, however, is talk about some of the data and facts that rarely get discussed, but are by no means any less important. Now, I'm not an expert on this subject, nor will I pretend to be. So I reached out to someone who is an expert on this topic, and I invited him onto tonight's show to talk to us about things. His name is Marcus Allen, and those who take a particular interest in this subject will almost certainly know his name. But for those who don't, Marcus Allen is the UK publisher of Nexus magazine, which he introduced to the United Kingdom and Europe in 1994. Nexus is the world's leading alternative news magazine, covering health, future science, hidden history, the unexplained, and UFOs. Nexus originates from Australia and is now sold in over 100 countries, including the United States and Canada. Marcus is now able to pursue his lifelong interest in the unexplained on a full-time basis. The moon landings and ancient Egypt are just two of the many taboo subjects that he has investigated, around which new questions have been raised that have yet to be adequately answered. Marcus has appeared on many television shows during the past 25 years to discuss the Apollo moon landing controversy on the BBC, UK Channel 4, UK Channel 5, Sky News, and Sci-Fi and Discovery channels, as well as being interviewed on numerous national, local radio and online shows in the UK and the United States, on Coast to Coast AM and The Conspiracy Show, for example. Marcus has also given many public presentations throughout Britain, Europe, and in Kathmandu, Nepal, which challenges the official story of men landing on the moon over 50 years ago. He asks anyone to prove him wrong when he claims that no human has landed on the moon. So firstly, I'd like to welcome Marcus Allen to the Dead Souls podcast. Marcus, I'm very honoured to speak with you tonight. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this and for sharing your time with us.
Delighted to be able to be here, Jamie. Thank you for your invitation.
Now, like many of those listening to this, I have some basic knowledge of the details that support the so-called moon landing hoax, but I wanted to get the perspective of an expert who could put things into far better terms than myself. So I guess my first question is, Marcus, why would NASA fake it?
Because they couldn't do it. They hadn't got the experience. They hadn't got the technology. They didn't know what they were doing, but they had to be seen to succeed. It was one of the great propaganda achievements of the 20th century. Land man on the moon. They were doing it live on television, don't forget, because everybody would then see it and they would say, wow, what an achievement. America has landed humans on the moon. Well, we all watched it. I watched it. I'm old enough to have been around when it happened. I watched it live on my little black and white television in London. And I believed it. Why would I not believe it? There was no reason not to believe it. So I did. Until about 30 years later, somebody made the suggestion that maybe it wasn't the way it was portrayed. Maybe there were some problems. And I started looking into it, and I realized that there were a lot of problems that had to be overcome. And so when you start looking at those problems and you realize that if they haven't been overcome, how could NASA claim to have landed humans, not unmanned craft, but humans on the lunar surface? And the more I looked into it, the more I realized that it was all fabrication. It was fake. It was fiction. It was fraud. But it was for a good purpose, we are told. We're told that the moon landings were an exhibition of America's technological superiority over the Soviet Union. Remember the Soviet Union?
I do.
Yeah. Soviet Union were achieving quite a lot in space. They'd put the first satellite into orbit. That freaked out America big time. Because if they put a satellite into orbit, they could drop a nuclear bomb. they were told. And everyone got freaked out by it. I mean, goodness me, think it through, guys. That doesn't happen that way. You can't just drop a bomb from orbit. It doesn't work that way.
So you believe, Marcus, that not just the initial Apollo 11 mission has been faked, but that all six Apollo moon missions were faked. Is that correct?
Yeah, obviously. If the first one was faked, they hadn't got it together for the second one or the third one. Well, the third one was even more dramatic. That was Apollo 13. Mm. Oh, dear, oh, dear. What a wonderful piece of script writing that was.
Why do you think they did that, Marcus? What was the point in falsifying a catastrophe in space? What do you think was the purpose of that being a phony emergency?
To generate further eyeballs on what was going on. Don't forget that Apollo 11 had occurred. That was July the 20th, in fact. Then we had Apollo 12 in December 1969. Now, there was a problem with Apollo 12 because we're told that one of the astronauts, Al Bean, I think it was, had pointed the camera directly at the sun and had burnt out the lens or burnt out the software that was operating the camera. So it couldn't work. There was nothing there. So nobody could see anything. They were bored with hearing astronauts talking about walking around on the lunar surface. But then we have Apollo 13 in April 1970. And what was that about? Oh, it was a space rescue mission. I say, it was a great piece of script writing. We didn't see anything. No, nothing happened on the moon. And it was wonderful. It got everybody's attention. We all said, oh, what are we going to do? Are those astronauts going to get back to Earth? Are they going to survive the problems in space? And there are a lot of problems in space. We'll come to those in a minute. Mm-hmm. So Apollo 13 was a rescue mission, and the brave astronauts succeeded. There's a problem here. The day after the official launch of Apollo 13, which was launched on April the 11th, 1970, mm-hmm. the day after that, on April the 12th, the Soviet Navy were conducting pre-announced naval exercises in the Bay of Biscay, off the coast of France and the north coast of Spain. And during their exercises, one of their ships came across an Apollo command module floating in the Atlantic. What the hell was it doing there? It had not been reported as being missing. So the Russians, being interested in finding out what was going on, hauled it on board their ship, took it back to their main port at Murmansk in northern Russia, east of Norway, and 6 months later handed it back to the American Coast Guard cutter, the South Wind, which would happen to be making a courtesy visit to Murmansk. Why was an Apollo command module? I mean, this is for real. There are photographs of it in Murmansk. There are photographs of it being hauled onto the South Wind, the US Coast Guard cutter South Wind, and it's being taken back to the main port at in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia. Now, that command module that was recovered from the Atlantic by the Soviet Navy, handed back to America in September 1970, is now on display at the Grand Rapids Museum in Michigan. There's a problem here because the real so-called Apollo 13 command module is on display in the Kansas Cosmodrome, the only mission that has two command modules on public display. What's going on?
And has NASA never given an explanation for that?
No, because the one at Grand Rapids Museum, that's the one that was hauled out by the Russians, is sealed as a time capsule until 2076, the 300th anniversary of the founding of America. So nobody can look inside it. Oh, dear. So we can't tell what's going on. This is very, very weird. This is very strange. If it was a genuine, well, it's referred to as a boilerplate command module, i.e. a practice command module. That's what a boilerplate is. It's something constructed to look like the real thing, that is in fact not flight worthy. It's just used for astronauts to practice getting in and out of the command module as it's floating in the water, because they're all recovered in the Pacific.
And NASA never did any practice runs for the Apollo mission outside of the continental United States?
No, they didn't. No, it was all done in America, because America had to be seen to succeed. Russia had achieved many space firsts at that point. Yeah. The first satellite in orbit, Sputnik. The first man in orbit, Yuri Gagarin. Though he wasn't the first, but we'll come to that. They were well ahead of America as space explorers. They had rockets. They had very powerful rockets, because mm-hmm. their rockets were designed to carry nuclear bombs. I mean, around that time, nuclear bombs were quite big things. They weighed about 5 tons. So they had to have big rockets to launch them.
So in the literature that you very kindly sent over prior to this interview, Marcus, you say that there are many unanswered questions and anomalies in the Apollo photography and film. Also, that there were significant holes in regard to how men could survive in the hard vacuum of space. Could you provide some further clarity on these comments, please?
Okay. The main anomaly is the vacuum of space. We all know that space is a vacuum. There's nothing there. It's a vacuum. Vacuums have properties. There are certain aspects of a vacuum which can be tested. And this is not some sort of weird and wonderful conspiratorial suggestion. This is science. Everybody knows that a vacuum exists. Everybody knows what vacuum can do and cannot do. In space, there is a vacuum. 60 miles above the Earth's surface. It's called the Kármán line, named after Theodor von Kármán, who was a NASA scientist who decided one early 1960s that he would define the edge of space. And he defined it as 100 kilometers above the Earth's surface, or 60 miles. That was to be the edge of space. Beyond that, you have space. Space is a vacuum. If space is a vacuum, what effect does a vacuum have on materials produced and manufactured here on Earth? There are two properties of a vacuum which are important here. One of them is called outgassing, and the lighter elements of a material, such as hydrogen, helium, oxygen, the main components of most craft created contain those elements. Because there is a vacuum, there is less pressure. Therefore, those elements escape from where they are manufactured. It's called outgassing. Now, if you've done those wonderful experiments, which you probably did as a school kid, I did, where you have a vacuum chamber, which is basically a bell jar, evacuates the atmosphere. If you have a bowl of water inside it, it starts to boil. But it's nowhere near the boiling point of water. It's 100, which is 100 degrees centigrade, 212 degrees Fahrenheit. It starts to boil. It boils because the water is outgassing. Well, it appears to boil. That's what it looks like. And most people are familiar with a term called the bends that divers suffer from if they come up from quite large depths too fast. Because what happens is that the gases within their blood, and there are gases within blood, oxygen, the blood carries oxygen around the body, so the oxygen is as a gas. If it's compressed by diving to considerable depth, well, a few hundred meters, if you come up too fast, the gas forms as a gas in the human body. It can be dangerous. So you have to come up slowly to ensure that the gas is retained within the liquid of the blood. I mean, it's standard procedure. And there's nothing odd about it. This is science. This is basic stuff. Anybody who's come up from depths too fast will know what the bends are about. If you're in space, you've got no pressure. And you've got a vacuum. What happens to the elements within whatever material is there? Let's call it some sort of aluminium. The lighter elements within that aluminium will outgas, i.e. be removed. That, in turn, weakens the structure that the metal from which the aluminium is supposed to be performing the aluminium is weakened. Now, it's possible. You may remember a few years back, the Israeli Space Agency launched a probe to the moon. It's called Bereshit. And that crashed a few hundred feet above the lunar surface. And we're told that it was due to the failure of some of the descent engine mounting brackets, which are made of aluminium, and were 3D printed. Okay, that's a sensible thing to do, 3D printed out of aluminium. But if you haven't tested it for vacuum effects, they fail. If you've got the formula wrong, if you haven't tested it. Now, I was being interviewed on Israeli television at the time about what we're talking about today, the moon landings. And I mentioned to the producer, I said, look, would you ask the Bereshit mission people, have they tested their 3D printed material in a vacuum chamber to ensure it will survive the levels of vacuum on the moon? Oh, it's a good question, they said. I'll pass it on. Now, whether he did or not, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But Israel haven't attempted since. The Russians have attempted a landing. It's quite recent. I think it was today, in August 2023. They attempted a second landing. The first landing had a similar failure to the Bereshit Israeli craft. It fell a few hundred feet above the lunar surface. Could it have been that it was the same problem? They hadn't tested the components in a vacuum. And when it got into the real heavy vacuum, or the hard vacuum on the moon, they failed. Whoops. Oh, dear.
You correctly discussed the aluminium within this spacecraft. Am I correct in that there would also have to be some protective elements within the astronaut's spacesuit to thus protect the astronauts from the radiation of the Van Allen belts too?
Well, there's certainly some radiation in space. I think everybody agrees on that. The Van Allen radiation belts, named after Professor James Van Allen of Iowa University, who in the early 1960s proposed that there were radiation belts around Earth, protecting Earth from the radiation of space, because all the radiation we receive here on Earth is derived from, or is generated by the sun. The sun produces all sorts of wavelengths of light, some of which are visible light, which we can use to see by. It also produces other wavelengths of light, X-rays, gamma rays, and other things which are not known to be conducive to human health. And those of us who are old enough to remember going through airport security when X-ray machines were first introduced, we were always told, don't put your camera or the film through the X-ray machine because it will damage it. Get them hand searched by the attendant officers. And that's what one did. I did it. I said, look, here are my film. I don't want to put it through the machine. Have a look at it. See if what I'm saying is correct, that they are photographic film. This is a key point. This is photographic film we're talking about here, not digital cameras. They came in 1975. So Apollo used photographic film. Now, a photographic film is damaged not only by radiation, but by vacuum. Where were all those lovely photographs taken of astronauts prancing around on the lunar surface here on Earth under controlled conditions? For Apollo 11, it was more than likely Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico, because that was where it was done.
I took a look at the website for the UK Institute of Physics recently, and they hold some information regarding the NASA Apollo missions. It states that the astronauts, while travelling through the Van Allen belts, were exposed to an average of around 0.46 rads of radiation. Whilst higher than medical X-ray personnel, this was still within safe levels, and particularly because of the astronauts' flight suits. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's good, isn't it? Institute of Physics don't know what they're talking about. They're just quoting NASA. I've actually queried the Institute of Physics and asked them to explain where they got the information from. Guess what? They haven't replied to me yet. Come on, Institute of Physics. You're supposed to know these things. You don't. You're just rabbiting on about what NASA say about their lunar missions. They're quoting from NASA. NASA, never a straight answer. Oh, dear. Sorry, I'm being a bit cynical here, aren't I?
Not at all, Marcus. In regards to NASA, then, have you ever had the opportunity to pose your questions directly to them? And have they ever responded to you?
Yes, I've certainly posed questions to NASA. because years ago, when I was doing the original research on this subject, obviously I was aware of the radiation problem. And I asked the question, I said, what radiation protection was built into the spacesuits the astronauts used, obviously successfully, on the lunar surface? And could those same spacesuits be used by technicians to enter Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, and now Fukushima, and help clear up the mess? I'm still waiting for the answer. NASA will not address them. Because if they do address that question and answer honestly, it will become obvious that humans are severely affected by radiation generated by the sun. And we are protected here on Earth by the Van Allen belts and by our atmosphere. 60 miles of atmosphere protect us considerably. Though if we stay out too long in the rays and we get too sunburned, we can suffer from it.
Yeah.
But we are sensible enough to know that we should not do that. So the idea of radiation, and this idea that you travel through them so fast that they weren't effective, is ridiculous. It's absolute nonsense. It took 2 hours for the rockets to travel through the Van Allen radiation belts.
Mm.
Even when they've done that, there's radiation all the way to the moon. It doesn't stop at the Van Allen belts. It goes on forever. You've got galactic cosmic rays from deep space. They're quite dangerous. You've got coronal mass ejections from the sun, otherwise known as solar flares. And you've got all these things that, and we're now being told that astronauts have got protective areas within the spacecraft that if there are solar flares, they can escape the main effects of them by going inside these chambers within their spacecraft. What are they talking about? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. The ISS, the International Space Station, and the Space Shuttle, and everything other than Apollo, only went into Earth orbit and traveled below the Van Allen radiation belts, which started about 600 miles out to 25,000 miles. Yeah, so the only people who've ever traveled through these dangerous levels of radiation, which is what was described quite recently by NASA. We have to research these dangerous levels of radiation before we can send humans through them. Well, they sent them through them on Apollo and it seemed to be okay. Nobody died. So what the hell is going on? Never a straight answer. That's what you get when you ask NASA. Sorry, NASA, you've got to do better than that, because there are enough people out there now, like myself, and many other hundreds of researchers into space travel, human space travel particularly, to know what to expect. In the 1960s, we didn't have the information we have now. We do now have the information. We know that radiation is dangerous to humans. It affects our DNA. And radiation is cumulative in the human body. So we can get severely damaged by it. So the idea that humans can just travel anywhere they like, go out to the moon, prance around on the lunar surface unprotected, is a fairy story. It's fake. It's fabrication. It's not real. Forget it. Humans have not landed on the lunar surface. And if anybody can prove me wrong on that, and I mean prove me wrong with scientific evidence, I want to hear about it. Because for 30 years, I've been saying humans have not traveled in space beyond the Van Allen belts. Prove me wrong.
I spoke briefly about the UK Institute for Physics. One of the claims that they make on their website is that the landing sites of all the Apollo moon landings are now visible with the assistance of consumer-grade telescopic apparatus. I personally have never seen this, nor seen any available photographs of such online. Have you seen anything like this, Marcus, or do you think this is another example of the Institute simply quoting NASA information or press releases?
Yeah, basically, that's what it is. You can't see anything on the moon the size of a pickup truck, which is what the lunar landers are, from Earth with a telescope on. You can't even see them with a Hubble telescope because they don't have the resolution required to identify something as small as a pickup truck on the moon. You can use a telescope to see some of the lunar craters, They're about 60 miles in diameter. So you should be able to see them from Earth. You can see them from Earth with a naked eye. The Copernicus crater, which is just to the left of center of the moon. Maybe you need a telescope to see some of the more detailed things on the moon, but you certainly cannot see something as small as a pickup truck on the lunar surface with a telescope from Earth. Forget it. I don't know what the Institute of Physics is trying to show here, but it's just repeating what NASA is saying. But if they're the Institute of Physics, they should know these things. They should know that there are resolutions of telescope. What object can be identified on the moon with a telescope? They should know that. It's not rocket science, it's basic physics. So come on, Institute of Physics, stop prancing about and trying to support NASA, because you're showing yourself up as being completely incompetent.
A lot of the information on the website for the UK Institute of Physics seems to be the rebuttals for the most commonly raised reasons as to why the Apollo moon landings were faked. Issues such as the movement of the flag in the Apollo 11 lunar video, or the multiple light sources in the Apollo moon images. Essentially, the anomalies that have been argued again and again over the years. What are your thoughts regarding these anomalies and rebuttals, Marcus?
Yeah, good question. I've read all of these. I've read them forever. Oh, there are no stars in the sky. Of course there are no bloody stars showing in the photographs. Anybody who understands photography will know that if you're going to set your exposure to ensure a correct exposure of an astronaut on the lunar surface directly illuminated by the sun, of course it's not going to be, the film is not going to be able to record the relatively faint stars in the sky. I mean, it's like trying to do that on Earth. You know, we could photograph stars in the sky if we point our camera up at the stars and expose for the correct time, which is usually a fairly lengthy exposure, to ensure that the stars show up on the film. Of course, now, this is a question very few people can answer. Who was the first person to make that comment, there are no stars in the sky? And the answer is Bill Kaysing in 1976, when he published his book, We Never Went to the Moon. Do you know why that title was chosen? It was chosen because Bill Kaysing, who was he's known as the fastest pen in the West. He was quite a prolific writer. And in the early 1960s, he was employed by Rocketdyne, who made the Apollo Saturn V engines, as a technical writer. And he said, after he'd left Rocketdyne in 1963, quite early on in the Apollo program, he actually said there's no chance of them getting to the moon because they haven't got enough energy in the engines. But that's a technical question, which we can come to if necessary. But he also was very prolific in supporting the Vietnam veterans in the late to mid 1970s, late 1960s, 1970s. And the Vietnam War had a really devastating effect on American army veterans. And one of them, who Bill Kaysing was talking to, said, why didn't you write a book saying we never went to the moon? And Bill thought, oh, that's a good title. I'll try it. Hence his book. It was self-published because nobody wanted to publish a book at the time contradicting NASA's wonderful experience of getting to the moon. But that was where that there are no stars in the sky and why is the flag flapping came from. Now, it's 1976, we're talking nearly 50 years ago, and there's still people like the Institute of Physics are still parroting that as some sort of exposure of people who question the lunar landings. I was trained as a photographer. I know enough about photography and using photographic film. I've used the Hasselblad cameras. I've used Kodak Ektachrome film. I know what film can and cannot do. I know how to read a photograph. You can look at a photograph and you can tell, if you know what you're looking for, the type of lens that was used, the exposure that was used, and various other technical aspects of photography. I look at those photographs and I can see that they could not have been taken on the lunar surface. because the depth of field that they are showing is far greater than the camera and the lenses that were used at the time, certainly on Apollo 11. Now, flags flapping on the moon is nonsense. The only time the flag is seen to move is when somebody is touching it, because they had a flag on a flagpole and the astronauts were trying to ensure that it stayed upright when they screwed it into the lunar surface. So they had to twist it backwards and forwards. Hence, the flag appears to flap. But that's the only reason it is. There are two films of flags moving without Apollo, without astronauts touching them. One is Apollo 15 and one is Apollo 17. If you want to check them out, they're there. And they appear to move as an astronaut walks past them. He's here on Earth under control conditions in an atmosphere, and he's walking past them. And so the air that he is moving moves the flag. It doesn't move very much, but and then the calculation can be made as to what the gravity is, because the flag is acting like a pendulum. You can calculate the level of gravity at that point, and it's Earth's gravity, 9.8 meters per second, as opposed to lunar gravity, 1.6 meters per second. So forget moving flags, forget no stars in the sky, and answer the questions about vacuum radiation on the moon and heat in the spacecraft. Because the Apollo spacecraft spent 3 days traveling from Earth to the moon in sunlight the whole way. What temperature would be inside that spacecraft?
That's a very good point, actually. Am I right in saying that the lunar surface temperature is a lot higher than the temperature here on Earth? I understand the lunar temperature is over 100 degrees Celsius or 212 Fahrenheit. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. On the moon, because there's no atmosphere, there are no clouds, there's nothing to stop the sun hitting the lunar surface with its full energy, the temperature on the moon is around 250 degrees centigrade, hotter than a boiling point of water. And at night, it's minus 200 degrees centigrade, i.e. very, very cold, because there's nothing to keep the heat in. Now, people will say at this point, oh, the moon is just like the Earth. It starts quite relatively cold in the morning, and the lunar day is 14 Earth days, because of the time it takes to orbit the Earth. No, forget it. As soon as the sun hits the moon, the temperature increases very rapidly indeed. And the evidence for that is quite straightforward. When the first shuttle missions were launched and some of the astronauts in the shuttle were asked to work outside the shuttle to repair various parts of the space station and other satellites that they were trying to recover, the Hubble Space Telescope being one of them. When the astronauts got outside from the International Space Station or from the shuttle, they complained that their hands got very cold when they were in the shadow of the Earth. Because if you're in the shuttle or the space shuttle or space station, you're orbiting Earth. Half the time you're orbiting, you're in the shadow of the Earth, i.e. very cold. Half the time you're in the sun, i.e. very hot. But the difference between the two is relatively short. So the astronauts were saying, look, you know, we got outside, we're going to repair this satellite, but our hands got so cold in the shadow of the Earth that we could hardly feel them and we couldn't use any tools. And NASA said, oh, don't be so stupid. Of course it's not that bad. And they said, yes, it is. We're here. We know what we're talking about. You don't know what you're on about. So NASA said, okay, take some thermometers up and measure the temperature so that we know what we're talking about. So that one of the next shuttle missions, they took thermometers up with them to measure the temperature in the shadow of the Earth and in the sunlight of the Earth. And guess what? They reported that as soon as they entered the shadow of the Earth, the temperature fell by over 100 degrees within a few minutes and stayed there until they got into the sunlight again, when it rose by over 100 degrees very rapidly. Sunlight hitting any object in space will affect its temperature immediately. Not any of these ridiculous suggestions that it's just like Earth and it takes forever to warm up. No, it doesn't. It warms up very fast.
Now, official data released by NASA states that combined approximately 400,000 people worked on the Apollo program. With that many people involved, how do you suppose the secret of a pre-planned hoax was ever kept quiet?
Oh, dear, this is one of the most ridiculous, not your question, that's a very valid question, but the idea that anybody can think that 400,000 people, the number of people who worked on the Apollo program in the early to mid-1960s, could keep a secret. Of course they couldn't keep a bloody secret. They didn't need to. They didn't know about any of this. They were doing the very best job they could, making the best rockets, the best engines, the best landers, the best control systems, the best computers that they could. They had no knowledge of any fabrication, and they watched Apollo launching the same way we all did, on television. 400,000 people certainly worked on the Apollo program, but don't forget, a lot of them were secretaries, support staff, drivers, cafeteria staff, rocket scientists amongst them, certainly. But they weren't keeping any secrets. There was no memo being circulated by NASA saying, don't tell anybody, but we're faking the landings. That didn't happen. The most number of people who would have been aware that there was some sort of fabrication going on is possibly about 50. And they were senior personnel within NASA. Obviously, it included all the astronauts. There were 24 of them. Not 27, as some people claim, but 24, because three astronauts flew twice to the moon.
So how high up do you think the hoax went? You say around 50 people were involved. Was the president aware, do you think? Was it a CIA intelligence operation? Who called the shots?
Oh, certainly. The president was involved. That was President Johnson at the time, not Nixon. He was the one who took all the plaudits. Johnson was involved. That is why the mission center at Houston is called the Johnson Space Center. Lyndon Baines Johnson was senator for Texas, and he was, one of his major objectives was directing funding towards Texas, which is why it was built in Texas. But it's called the Johnson Space Center. He was involved. Now, the story of what happened on that is recounted in the latest issue of Nexus magazine, which is Deathbed Confession, NASA Faked the Moon Landings. That's the title. And there's a list of people who were attending the fabrication of the Apollo 11 mission at Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico in mid-1968. President Johnson was present, as was Neil Armstrong, as was Buzz Aldrin, as were several of the mission directors from NASA, senior NASA directors, as were various other people. One of them was a filmmaker, because they had to be sure that the filming that was being done at Cannon Air Force Base, which is a relatively small US Air Force Base in New Mexico, but it was isolated, and there was building work going on anyway at Cannon Air Force Base. So the introduction of lots of additional lorries bringing in equipment wouldn't have been questioned very much, because there weren't many people at Cannon Air Force Base to question it. The eyewitness of the fraud was the security officer at Cannon Air Force Base, Gene Akers. And this story is recounted by his son, who was aware of what was going on. It's all in Nexus. It was written by Bart Sabrell. Bart Sabrell has spent many years investigating it. But one might say, well, if Bart Sabrell has been revealing all this information, why is he still alive? Good question. He's alive because he's being protected by people who are so angry at the fraud that NASA has committed that they want the astronauts to expose themselves as being fake and fraud. They are cheats, they are thieves, they are liars, because they didn't do what they said they did. I went to a to an autograph show in London called Autographica, you know, about 20 years ago. And Buzz Aldrin was there signing autographs for, guess what, £275 a time. He signed thousands of them. That's his pension. Not one for me. I chose not to engage with him. So that there's a great deal of new information available now. And I say the article in Nexus and Bart Sobrell's book, Moon Man, recounts a lot of what was going on.
Where can our listeners pick up a copy of Nexus magazine, Marcus? What stores stock it?
You get it from W.A. Smith. It's available in good news agents. And if you let me have your address, Jamie, I'll send you a copy.
Oh, that would be amazing. Thank you so much.
That issue is available in North America at the beginning of September. It comes out a month after the issue in the UK and Europe, which is what I distribute. And it's the lead article in there, and it recounts what went on. It's extraordinary. Go Cannon Air Force Base, that's where it all happened. That was for Apollo 11. Now, a lot of the filming that was done, not television, we've all seen it on television, haven't we? We all watched the Apollo landings on television. How do we know that's real? Oh, it must be real. It's on television. I've seen gorillas climb the Empire State Building in King Kong. I've seen dinosaurs chase kids around kitchens in Jurassic Park. Is that real? No, it's Hollywood at its finest. This is what was going on. It was fake. It was fabricated. It had to be done. Now, the reason it was fabricated was because you have to go back to when Apollo happened, the late 1960s, early 1970s. What else was going on in the world at the time? The Cold War was getting hot. The space race was ramping up. The Vietnam War was getting very unpleasant. Presidents were being assassinated. Senior politicians were being assassinated. America was falling apart. There had to be some good news. Apollo was the good news. Nobody was going to die. Everybody was going to cheer. But it was fake. As I've described it, it's a brilliantly executed propaganda exercise.
What was the opinion of the moon landing at the time in places like the Soviet Union? Did they just buy what the United States was saying, or was there some kind of skepticism there?
At the time it happened, there appeared to be considerable congratulation being offered to America. That's because the Soviet Union, as they were then, were hiding certain events which they probably America knew about, but they prefer America did not publicize them. Soviet Union was quite a secretive place. The driving force behind the Soviet space program was a guy called Sergei Korolev. Mm-hmm. During his lifetime, was known only as the chief designer, because he was so important to the Russian space program or Soviet space program. It was only after his death in 1966, following a failed operation, very unexpectedly died, and there was nobody to succeed him. So they were in, basically the Soviet space program was in a bit of a quandary. How do we deal with it? Now, if you move forward a little bit to the Chinese space program, which is quite successful, they've landed unmanned craft. Note unmanned craft. Unmanned craft on the far side of the moon. It's called the far side of the moon because we never get to see it. It's not called the dark side of the moon. That's the record by Pink Floyd. And the Chinese have landed a craft there, which is quite an achievement. Now, I have a friend who works at a Chinese space agency. He's American, so obviously it's a bit unusual, but he works there. And he said, on many occasions, he said, nobody in China believes America landed humans on the moon. It's just not possible. It's taught in our universities. It's taught in our schools. We know it's not possible. Not just the radiation, not just the heat, but the vacuum as well. We know all about that. But we're not going to out NASA. Not going to out NASA. We're not going to show America up for being the idiots that they are. We're going to continue to support them. We're not going to talk about it because we want their cooperation. They've got a lot of good information that we can use, and we do. So we're not going to out them. We're not going to blow the whistle. We're not going to tell them America's failed to land on the moon. What's the advantage to us to do that? It's much more advantageous to us to keep quiet, maintain the fiction, and take the benefits. And that's what we're doing.
I just want to touch, before we finish up here, Marcus, on the story of Thomas Barron. Are you familiar with what happened to him? I understand that he came forward with some controversial information that he had unearthed while working for North American Aviation.
Yes, Thomas Barron was the safety officer for North American Aviation, who had constructed the Apollo command module. Mm-hmm. And this is Apollo 1, the tragic fire that killed three astronauts, because they were so incompetent, they filled the thing with oxygen. It was a test at Houston, and sorry, no, a test at Cape Canaveral, which became Cape Kennedy, at the Apollo 1 mission, with Gus Grissom as the commander, Ed White and Chaffee as the crew members. And they were inside this Apollo 1 spacecraft. It was filled with oxygen under pressure, 22 pound per square inch pressure, which would give them the difference between pressure in space, where there's no external pressure, and the internal pressure of the craft. So they had to pressurize it at 22 pound per square inch. Well, guess what happened? It exploded. That's what oxygen does. Oxygen is very useful. We breathe it in. It helps keep us all alive. But under certain conditions, oxygen can be deadly. And this was one of the occasions. You put it under pressure. Thomas Barron was the safety officer for North American Aviation, who had built the Apollo command module. And he had written a 500-page report on the shortcomings and what needed to be done to ensure that it could be utilized in space. There was a shorter version, a 50-page version, which was presented to Congress when he testified in front of Congress about what happened. And a few days after his testimony and the presentation of the 500-page report, which had never, ever surfaced, nobody has ever seen it, he was killed in a car crash on a level crossing by a train, we're told, that was operated by NASA. Oh dear. His wife and his daughter were killed at the same time. Oh, it could have been a coincidence. It could have been one of those accidents which do happen in life. But it just seemed to be a little bit more coincidental than that. When the coincidences stack up, you have to wonder if it's real. So yes, Thomas Barron did die, unfortunately, just after his report was issued. And the report has never, the full 500-page report that he wrote about the shortcomings of the North American Aviation construction of the Apollo command module, Apollo 1, has never, ever been seen.
Interesting. Marcus, do you ever think we'll get to the moon?
Unmanned craft has certainly got to the moon. There's no dispute about that at all. Humans, on the other hand, no. No human has ever got to the lunar surface, let alone walked across it, and certainly not returned from it alive. That can't happen. Unless anybody listening to this, and I hope there are a lot of people listening to it, some in America, I'm sure, will be able to correct me if I'm wrong. So just address your concerns and how you think I'm wrong to either nexusmagazine.com, go to the contact section and you can write to me there, or to a website which has all this information, aulis.com, aulis.com. So contact there and you can write to me if you want to. So tell me how wrong I am, or conversely, tell me how right I am, because I've yet to be persuaded after 30 years of research into Apollo that I am wrong. Prove me wrong. Prove me incorrect. Come on, there must be somebody out there who can do it. And if anybody at NASA is listening, I want to hear from you as well.
Marcus, I really want to thank you for coming on and speaking with us tonight. It's been really refreshing to hear you discuss scientific data and evidence that isn't really covered in the mainstream media. I really want to thank you for providing all this information for us and for sharing your time with us tonight. Thanks, Marcus.
Well, thank you, Jamie. I appreciate the invitation, and I hope it's been of benefit to some people to hear it.
Well, me certainly, if no one else at all. Marcus, thank you.
Okay.
Well, that's it for tonight's episode, everyone. Hopefully, if nothing else, you have listened to what Marcus Allen has shared with us and have been able to form your own conclusions regarding the Apollo moon landings. Whether you believe the landings happened or agree with Marcus in that they were an elaborate hoax, you have to admit that there certainly is some strange and compelling questions that surround the story. Until next time, my friends.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.